Tonight on Life on the Rock,
we have John Acquaviva, part one. He'll give a reflection
and much more.
Tonight on Life on the Rock, we have Dr. John Acquaviva, professor of exercise science at Wingate University in North Carolina. This is a part one of two shows that we're going to be doing with Dr. Acquaviva. The topic is on improving your sportsmanship through Catholic teaching, a message we all need to hear today and really in our culture and a world that's saturated with sports. So we're now going to a reflection with John Acquaviva.
For those struggling with body dysmorphia, body image issues, here's what I suggest. To take your faith a step further, when you receive the Eucharist, in Greek, as you know, means giving thanks. Give thanks for the body that you have. Give thanks for all it can do for you. Look at it as a machine on what it can do rather than what it can't do. It's not something to perfect, it's just something to get closer to our Lord and to serve the people that are around you, in your family, your friends, and so forth. Also, don't forget to make confession a part of your sacramental life. We sometimes are not as thankful for what God has given us, and that is something that is encouraged to take to the confessional. God has given you this wonderful body. He has embodied you for a reason. And when you're not thankful for that, that is something that would be appropriate to take to the confessional. Lastly, don't forget prayer. The more time you spend on your knees, the more time that you offer those prayers to God. Remember, the Psalms say there are devils out there prowling, aiming for your soul, and prayer is going to, and that devil is in the form of social media and other things that control your body image issues. And my suggestion is you take those issues to prayer and you help God to ease your soul.
Well, John, welcome to Life on the Rock. And you're a professor of exercise science, which is an interesting, program or master's program that you have.
Well, it's an undergraduate program. Okay. I've earned my master's degree and my PhD, so I have a lot of schooling in this area. And I teach, the primary classes I teach are probably what people would think. I teach sports nutrition, mm-hmm. So I not only teach nutrition, but how the athlete should eat and how we use carbohydrate, how we use fat, how we use protein and so forth. And I teach strength and conditioning, which is a big part of preparation for athletes, right? And then I also teach what's called exercise physiology, how the body changes as a result of exercise.
Really? Yeah. That is interesting. Fascinating.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. In fact, I get a lot of good questions and I love my job. It's great to wake up to that every day.
Yeah. And so you're going to talk to us today a lot about sportsmanship and also body image in another episode. But I think it's very interesting that your background is in sports. You need played a number of sports. Can you kind of tell us your own sports background and history?
Sure. I was one of seven in the city of Detroit. We went to this grade school that was particularly good in the CYO. Mm-hmm. We won so many championships. And so it was just the thing to do. And I had a particular talent for a couple sports. I was involved. So it bled into high school, and then I played basketball, football, and baseball. I was better in baseball than any of them. And then I went on to play Division II baseball.
Okay.
And I had an opportunity to play professionally in Europe for a year. And I played for a few years after that. And somewhere in there, I picked up rugby. And I played that for 15 years. So I would literally play rugby in the fall and the spring. And in the summer, I'd play baseball. Yeah. Of course, I was single at the time. It allowed me to do that. And then now I'm married to my wife, Alicia, and we have five children, and they're 14 to 3. And then the ones that are 14 to 9 are all involved in sport. And that's actually what motivated me to write this book on sportsmanship.
And quickly, what did you play in baseball? What was your position?
I was a catcher.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people, they tried to peg me in college, like, you're a wrestler. And I was like, no, I never wrestled in my life. I'm a catcher. But to some people, that makes sense because they're usually like the more sturdy, the more maybe muscular of the people on the field.
Probably had strong legs and that helped you in rugby, I'm assuming.
I did, yeah. And I think I was a little faster than most people, so they had a hard time catching me. And that's an important factor in rugby.
Well, I think, you know, too, with sports, I think it plays a great role in youth development,
yeah.
especially in character and virtue.
Yes.
And of course, there's a right way and a wrong way
yeah.
of going about it. But why do sports matter?
Sports matter because sports are a huge part of our culture, right? Mm-hmm. In so many ways. The main two ways, though, is that so many of our youth in local rec teams, what are called travel teams, which are usually mm-hmm. kind of like for the more, excelled player. High school sports, of course, is the identity. As you know, playing football in Texas, it's the identity of so many young people,
right.
both boys and girls, men and women. And of course, it's one of the unique things about American college, right? It's pure Americana, college sports. So it is part of our culture. It's on TV. They even, if you watch ESPN or other sports-related programming, sometimes they'll have high school sports on.
Oh, right.
It used to be a few years ago, it was only college and pro, and now it's high school. So it's a big part of our culture. But the other aspect is parents and grandparents mm-hmm. are nurturing those children and grandchildren to be athletes, to be involved in a lot of different sports, to succeed. And I think, as we'll get into, there's a lot of pressure on those kids at all ages. And I think that's part of the problem.
I think, too, you just kind of hit it, because now we're seeing a lot of the sports at the high school level. And I just know, even whenever I kind of tune in, with a lot of these athletes, they just look already like they're in college.
That's right.
I mean, they are just, they're big, they're fast. And you just kind of are wondering, it's like, where did he come from?
Yeah, and for the most part, that's just purely genetic,
right.
and it's this evolution of the human body. And of course, we know more about nutrition and strength mm-hmm. and conditioning, like sports nutrition and strength and conditioning. Two of the courses I teach were not even a thing before 1990.
Yeah, because I'm gonna say, whenever I was playing, you just gobbled whatever was
right.
in front of you,
that's
didn't
right.
matter.
And you lifted a few weights. Yeah, but, and now it's year-round training.
Yeah.
It's, like our school, where I teach at Wingate University, is most other schools, they not only have a strength and conditioning staff, not just person, but a staff, but they often have a registered dietitian on staff as well. And they meet with the individual teams, and they'll meet with individuals. And so that's something that didn't exist just 15 years ago.
No, I don't think so.
And that's part of why we see bigger, stronger, and faster today.
And I just remember guys drinking a Dr. Pepper before a football game, and didn't seem to affect them.
As long as it wasn't a Pabst Blue Ribbon, that's, that's okay. No, that would actually be discouraged because of the carbonation in there. But you're right, there was not much of a care for that. It's like, let's just eat and drink and let's have a game and see who wins.
Yeah, I know I couldn't do that, but some of our guys did.
So. No, that's true. That's true.
But also virtue just goes a long way.
Yeah.
I always think about the moral virtues that all of them are brought into sports. And I think sports are a great channel just to really cultivate a lot of that, but especially with the athletes themselves.
Right.
A lot of them need direction in the areas of temperance, of justice, prudence. Can you speak a little bit about that too?
Sure. I would say the biggest one there is respect. And there's respect can fan out a lot of different ways for the athlete. But for instance, the athlete, it's a must that they respect the call and the referee and umpire's decision.
Right.
It's a difficult thing to do at times, isn't it? Right? We disagree with the call. We watch it on a replay in slow motion. We see why they're wrong or where they were wrong or why they're wrong. And ultimately, they are the authority. And we have to respect that authority. And parents sometimes have a difficult time doing that. It makes for ugly situations. The other people that must be respected are the coaches, because mm-hmm. it's the same factor. They make those decisions. They're the ones that ask for the whistle. They're the ones that ask for the clipboard. In almost all cases of youth sport, they're pure volunteers, and they give hours and hours, well beyond what the other coaches give, the assistant coaches, and of course what the parents do. And those people, right or wrong, whether they know the sport or not, and of course they always, in the parents' mind, don't mm-hmm. know as much about the sport as they should, but they still need to be respected.
Right.
They still need to be respected just because they are a child of God. You can disagree with them, and that's normal, but how we handle that disagreement is part of what makes sport ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect is self-sacrifice, and that can be both mm-hmm. good and bad. And sometimes people hear self-sacrifice and it sounds like it's a noble thing, but I'm gonna go to the other side of the wall here. And if somebody takes something that is illegal, like an anabolic steroid or human growth hormone, they would be sacrificing their body, right? Because there are potential harms to that. And they would be thinking, I'm doing this for the betterment of the team. But really what they're doing is they're doing it for themselves. Yeah. But they make the excuse of, I'm trying to make my team better. And as a result of them being better, the team would probably and likely be better as well. So that's a way that we can kind of twist what we consider a virtue of self-sacrifice.
Yeah, there's a manipulation there.
Yes.
Like I think a false ideal and good.
Yeah.
That, you know, somebody can strive after. But I really like the fact that you really hit the point on respect, because both of those positions, referee, coach, in one sense, you have to learn how to take criticism well.
Of course.
And a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I just know the other kind of week I was watching a football game where there was just a blatant foul that wasn't called.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, just everything's erupting.
That's right.
You know.
That's right.
And but really, I think, too, just keeping that composure,
yes,
that focus, and again, they're the judge, they're the authority.
That's right.
Just move forward is so important.
And part of it is, one of the things that sets Catholicism apart is this authoritarian body that we have in the Vatican, right? The Magisterium.
Right.
And we are asked to respect that authority.
Absolutely.
And so many other faiths, there is no ultimate authority. And we have this authority in the Magisterium and in the Pope. And that is one of the reasons why the CYO and Catholic high schools really should be more virtuous, because that those virtues should be practice of respecting authority. Mm-hmm. But often it breaks down just because of pride, right? People's pride is so big. There's this demand to win. I not only am going to win, I must win. And of course, when you have that mentality, it often means an ugly behavior and vice comes out.
Well, we have to go to a break, but whenever we come back, let's get more into the virtue in relation to the parents.
Very good.
Well, John, you've been around the world of sports for a long time. You've seen a lot of things.
Yes.
But also just the role of the relation between the parent and child. How have you seen just parenting evolve with their involvement as a kids in a sport?
Yeah, I think there's two real big reasons why it's evolved into something that is probably more, is seen as more negative than it is positive. One of those reasons is there's more pressure on the child than ever.
Mm-hmm.
There's more money available for scholarships. There's this, what's called NIL, name, image, and likeness,
right,
not just tens of thousands, but maybe possibly millions of dollars to be paid to the college athlete. Even if they don't earn those contracts, now the schools, as per the NCAA, can actually pay those people directly. And it's a recruiting tool. So the parents feel more pressure than ever. There's more all-star teams, there's more travel teams, and people, of course, parents live in part, at least some do, through the skill and through the participation of their daughter or son. And of course, every parent wants to see their kids succeed. And when they do, they take a great deal of pride in that. And of course, that is the downfall of man, right? Having all this pride. And then there's more than ever available to pros. So I think all of that lends itself to more pressure on the parents to have a successful child. So if a call goes against them, they get mad at the referee or the umpire. If the coach doesn't play them as often, if they don't play them at the position they think that they're best fitted for, they get frustrated, mad, even argue with the coach. And that comes out in a lot of different ways. And unfortunately, it's probably the ugliest part of youth sport, are the parents getting on either the opposite coach, their own coach, the other players, and of course the referees themselves. The second reason is low birth rate, I think, plays a role here. I'm one of seven, and we grew up in the city of Detroit, all playing sports, but it was a big deal if one parent or both parents could make it to a game. They were never at practice. And it was a big deal because we were all different ages and we were all over the city playing all these different sports, literally. And if you have one or two children, you can put more time, effort, and money into that one child. And when you do that, it goes back to the original point, the first point of there's that much greater chance and need to succeed. I put all this money into this. I put all this time into this son or daughter. You need to succeed here. And they put a lot of pressure on them.
Right.
And so I think if there's one or two kids, there's probably more likely that's gonna go on. People have, you know, less kids for a bunch of different reasons. I'm just saying that's the result of that. And that can be problematic for sportsmanship.
I think too, even as an athlete, just having respect for the abilities and talents of other teammates that do carry a lot of weight. And in one sense, everybody knows that just because of what they're able to achieve. But I think recognizing kind of that sense of distributive justice that, you know, some people earn it, you know, and some people just have to work at it. And that might take extra time.
That's right.
But, you know, ultimately, both ends, you're working towards that same goal.
That's right.
You know, even if you're on standby, your duty is to be ready to go.
Yeah.
Because in sports, especially football, rugby, injuries, you know, there's a high injury risk.
That's right.
At any moment. And players know that, parents know that, coaches know that. So even if your duty at that moment is just on the sideline, not that you pray or want the guy in front of you to get injured, but you yourself have to be ready and ready to move out there.
Right.
So I think even those lessons of patience, of humility, those bear great fruit,
of course,
especially in the life of a young person.
Yeah, there's no question. There's a whole lot of virtue that can be gained, and there's a whole lot of vice that can mm-hmm. come out and can be gained through bad parenting, bad coaching, and so forth. And it should be noted that of the thousands, literally the thousands of parents usually that volunteer to coach, most of them do average to a very good job. Mm-hmm. They understand two basic concepts. One is we play to win, which is okay. I argue that in the book. Not only can you play to win, you should play to win. Because brother, if you and I are gonna sit down for a game of Monopoly or checkers, if you stop trying, the game is no fun. You have to try to win this game.
Yeah.
And coaches are almost always trying to do this. Sometimes they put virtue ahead of winning, but the fact is I argue that you can be virtuous and competitive. You just have to live within this certain world of discipline, respect, humility. And if you have those in play, competition is going to be very good and the overall outcome is going to be successful.
And I just even remember whenever I was, you know, in high school and everything, there were always, whenever I was playing football, there were two messages preached every day.
Let's hear it.
And that was your grades, what you do in the classroom matters.
Yeah, of course.
In football.
Yes.
Because Texas has also a rule, no pass, no play.
Got it.
But you have to excel in the classroom or you're not going to be on the playing field.
Very good.
The other one is what you do outside of football matters.
Yes.
Your moral conduct.
That's
conduct.
Right.
Matters. Be on your best behavior.
Sure.
Set the example. You represent this community, this organization.
Right.
I heard that nonstop.
I like that.
I mean, that was just, we were just bombarded with it.
Yeah.
But sometimes you don't hear stuff like that. But, you know, but the focus isn't really on football. But football participates in those messages.
That's right.
And so I think just even those lessons, those early lessons that we learn, you know, and those influences through our coaches, great men, most of them are.
Yeah.
That we can always look back and say, I want to be like that guy.
You know, a point off of this is so many times we represent not just our family, we represent maybe the school we're representing, if it's a travel team, whatever the case is. And like you said, you're representing that community, you're representing that high school, but further, you're representing a religion. And here's what I mean. Mm. I spoke to these high school students last year. It was a Catholic school in Virginia, and around them, there was no other Catholic high school. So they played in a private school league. So there was Episcopalian, the Lutheran high school, and so forth. But they're all private schools, they're all religious schools, but there was no other Catholic school in their league. And one of the things I told them was, there's a lot of reasons why you want to show virtue through sport and in sport. But one of them is some people have no contact with Catholics outside of sport. They know you're representing this particular high school, and that should be part of your motivation. Because think about it, if there's bad sportsmanship displayed, what does that say about the faith?
Right.
What does that say about that school? What does it say about that coach? And that's the one thing I tried to instill in them. And I'm sure those coaches have done the same thing.
Right.
But I wanted to, you know, for it to come from an outside source, that you are representing literally a faith. And that's important. That's important to our faith.
That's so true, that sports in that context is really the missionary field of evangelization.
Absolutely. You know, JP2, you know, he is beloved for many reasons. But really, as I write in the book, the fuel for me writing that book was he created a office of the laity called the Office of Church and Sport. Hmm. And one of the points, there's 5 points on the Vatican website in which says, why did John Paul II start this Office of Church and Sport? And one of them is, this is a wonderful way to evangelize. Huh. And it's like St. Francis said, right? You can preach the gospel without saying a word. You can be respectful without mentioning anything about the Ten Commandments. You can show discipline without mentioning anything in the catechism. You can display the virtue without on the field without having to say anything.
Right, right.
Right?
Man, that's all good stuff.
It's very good stuff.
Well, John, we've run out of time.
I bet we have.
But I thank you for being on Life on the Rock.
Thank you.
One of the things that Dr. John Acquaviva really highlights in this episode is that sports really offer that opportunity for us to become evangelists. Because every sport, in one sense, is a mission field for that evangelization. And as a Catholic, we have to represent our faith, our community, our church, our families. We have to set that good example before all. And I also like the fact that he highlighted that we have to have a great sense of respect for authority. And that's very difficult to exercise at times. So we do have to rely on the Holy Spirit, those moral virtues, to really build us up, to really put our faith in God, to respect those who do exercise authority over us, and really place a confidence in their judgments and in their decisions. Again, not always easy to do, but we have to have that trust and in that faith, because ultimately all human authority is a reflection of God's authority. And God wills the goodness of us all. He wants us to be holy. He wants us to be happy. And he wants to give us great peace in life and not be burdened with so many anxieties in this world. So whenever we go out and play a sport, we should always just keep in mind to be that good example, to be a person of virtue, of courtesy, of respect, of honor. And that is our mission. So as we go out into that mission field, into that vineyard, may God bless you.
This world and all it offers me, it seduced me more than once and brought me to my knees, captivated in my mind and praying for release. Well, I want to get washed in the water and finally find some peace. We're gonna walk down to the Jordan, we're gonna walk down to the Jordan. Gonna walk down to the Jordan just like Jesus did. Yeah, we're gonna walk down to the Jordan. We're gonna walk down to the Jordan. We're gonna walk down to the Jordan just like Jesus did. Just like Jesus did. Well, surprise, surprise, I fell again, and it's even worse this time. 'Cause now I know I'm missing out on that sweet can of wine. Well, I'm done with lying to myself, 'cause I know the fault is mine. Well, I wanna get washed in the water and leave my sin behind. We're gonna walk down.